This is Channel 2 something or other, and the beginning of the visit with Bob and Doris Sterling, this Saturday the 13th of April, 74. Channel 2's right or left, I don't know which. And beginning the visit with Bob and Doris Sterling, this Saturday the 13th of April, 74. Channel 2, right or left, and the beginning of the visit with Bob and Dorothy Sterling this Saturday, the 13th of April, 74. Channel 2, right, and beginning the visit with Bob, or Channel 2, right or left, and beginning a visit with Bob and Dorothy Sterling this Saturday after lunch, the 13th of April, 74.
I think it has to go back to the preparation for it, because
yeah,
and it won't take very long. The preparation, the going to do study the humanities, of course, was for me an extremely exciting experience.
I had no
preparation at all for it.
Good Lord, I didn't realize that you had to go.
Yeah, I had nothing, and it was very difficult to get in for that reason, but they finally decided that if they didn't say yes, then no was going to tear the place down. I really was adamant about going back, and
you were pushing.
I really was pushing, and they began to realize that I was serious and not just making noise. So those 3 years of taking theology and Greek and some English, because my English wasn't very good, and New Testament history and Old Testament history and so on, it was extremely exciting, because it really, I began to learn that for me, my payoffs in life were human or person oriented, not thing oriented, which is what I had been doing in engineering. And that was exciting to find that out, and to begin to see that felt much different to me. And then I got into the church as an assistant minister in North Carolina, and began to realize some of the problems that the ministers have with their own organizational structure. They have the same problem that I had in industry. They had to work their way up, and there were certain ways you did it, and certain written and unwritten kinds of things that went on that you had to learn. You had to learn the ropes to make it.
What are some of the ropes?
Well, first of all, you have to start, no matter what your age or what your background is, you have to start from at the bottom. Then you have to.
You mean really?
Yeah, really.
You mean you got to go out on the street?
You go right out to the most distant church. Or take a circuit and start at the pay bottom, where that's what happens. You go out to the distant churches and the pay isn't very much, so you have to start there. And you have to please the district superintendent. You have to, whatever his phobias or his whims and fancies are, that he's an individual just like the manager of a factory.
I never realized that. What would he expect from?
Depends upon his personal needs. He's a person. He has needs.
Such as?
Well, if he's fundamentalist in his theology, then you'd better pretty well translate what you think into fundamentalist theology.
When
or you'd
there.
Never make it. Well, even if he's not there, report people, it gets back where you are. And so you begin to feel the disciplines of your own personal feelings coming back, you know, about your old feelings. So there is not much more freedom for discovery or another point of view. And I obviously had another point of view. Mine was, would fall much closer to Tillich than it would to Neo-Orthodoxy. I was much closer to existentialism than Neo-Orthodoxy. So I studied Tillich. Duke was not a humanistic, or was not a humanistic school. It was a traditional school.
Really?
But I went there to study humanism. And I did. Most of my papers were in that area. Most of my time was spent in the library reading that. And the general tenor of theology in the churches is neo-orthodox or fundamentalist. Very, very difficult for me to accept, because there was really no way I could experience it, and I needed that kind of support in my life. Was that when I believe something, then I would like very much to get as close to that in experience as possible before I could put much energy into it. So I came back to Gainesville after that experience up there, and it was in pretty good shape, and had planned to come
after 3 years at Duke.
3 years at Duke.
Good Lord have mercy.
And
well, you certainly had the reading behind you.
Yeah, I had a tremendous background by that time. You know, for me
sure,
it was big.
Sure.
And planned to take a church, and had been ordained in the meantime. And the district superintendent offered me a chance to open a new church in Northeast Gainesville at something like $2,700 a year salary, with a house allowance and a car allowance. I think the whole thing came to something like a total of $4,000 a year. Of course, Jeff and Tim were just ready to go to college, and I was 43. And I discussed this with him, money, you know, and told him that it was pretty difficult for me to consider that as a possibility, because I owned property, I had a pretty good mortgage to pay. And it would have required Dorothy to immediately go to work, and she was not extremely happy about doing that as part of the ministry. So I literally told him that I couldn't do it for that,
yeah.
And was immediately told that I didn't have any commitment, and therefore, you know, I really shouldn't be in the whole thing. So I took him in his word and left. Never did. Went to teaching.
Oh, you can see the handwriting.
I went to see the bishop and had a nice talk with him, and he said, well, if we had had a ministry in teaching, we'd been all right, but they didn't have any ministry in teaching, no teaching ministry.
Yeah. And but you didn't want the teaching ministry, you wanted the ministry.
I wanted the ministry, but I wanted it to at least appear to support me. So
I got him off on this.
Yeah, he did. He asked me about that. So I literally never got in. That's what I meant. I was in with all the credentials, but in the eyes of that district superintendent, was a very conservative man.
Yeah.
I didn't have the commitment, and I agreed with him.
Well, do you what sort of hand do you take now in it?
None. None. No. I put all my energy in my school, in the school. And I think there probably is as much of a ministry there as there is in the church, as a matter of fact, for me.
Well, he had 3 years at Duke, eh? And furthermore, he just changed his pigments, his skin. He went from
I probably haven't gotten over it yet.
I'm telling you,
great.
I could take just so much of that mechanical world.
I find my that coming along, though, and really not getting in the way.
Yeah.
I see them very close, really, in many ways.
It's part of Bob's makeup, in a way.
It provides me a thing world and a person world and skills in both worlds and the ability to discriminate a little bit between them, which I never could do before.
Well, we don't even talk about the ministry, but what I found, and it limits things greatly, down here in the cattle country, one of the ministers comes along on this little circuit. It's a beautiful little circuit.
Mm-hmm.
From, I think, three churches on it. It was the Sunday church.
Mm-hmm.
Say, if you want to start that now, I'm going to send you another one.
What? Nothing. I'm not saying a thing.
I'll go ahead and say it, but say it out of way when you all hear it.
I said, have a man.
Yeah. And they didn't know one end of a cow from another. Now that's not right, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the things they talk about simply can't be in another realm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, now you see, I talk like I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm. You should.
But it seems like it's off kilter somehow or other. You see, when they don't in a cattle country.
Or if it's in another area where people's involvements are in around certain activities, they need to talk about that as though that you know that's where their heads are, that's where they're feeling.
Well, they've got mostly the artisan type of people, and who can build a house and do a nail and all like that, and they can't drive a nail. They can't mow the lawn. They can't fix the lawnmower.
Mm-hmm. Fine.
So they got, I don't know what that is. It's a dislocation. I wish I knew, I don't know. No one objects to them. They just take them.
They put them in that little box that's just supposed to know about religion.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I used to think about Miss Anna up there. She was 95. She lived to be 95. And she was alert, and we used to, when she had her birthday or to have a little party, the thing we'd give her is a religious book. Well, that's the last thing we needed to give her. She had religion every day in the week.
Mm-hmm.
We just stuffing her down.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, a fella can really be flat-headed.
Well, I always say, if you want to give a nice gift, give something you'd like to have for yourself.
Now, this is what I've got into. This is that Foxfire.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't gone into that.
No, I haven't.
Well, it's very simple. This young fellow came down from Cornell in his first year of teaching, and he was up at Raven Gap. That's up in the mountains in the far corner of Georgia. And he wasn't teaching much. And he looked around to see what he could do. And I can't tell you all the connections, but what he wound up doing was sending these youngsters out into the community.
Mm-hmm.
And this is let them look at their old community. Now, it's up there where you have old timers. Here you see the crackers are all gone. But if they're not, you can't tell a cracker from a streetcar conductor. But now what they did in this, they talked to them, and they took down what they said, and they took pictures of what they could do. You see, here they're making a shed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part of it is over here at moonshining. I used to take a little hand at moonshining.
Good.
But I never knew anything about it. And here it's got moonshining. Moonshining as a fine art.
Mm-hmm.
you see, all in here, they used to have moonshine. Grandma Rawlins, and she lived up this Rochelle Road from Micanopy, in a little old 2-4 place. I know where the old house is. They have the house there now, but they live in a long house trailer, motor home. And they used to, they'd speak for her butter and her buttermilk and stuff that she took to the store. But old man Rollison, he made fine moonshine. And old Tuck Mack out here, who was one of his best customers, I take it. Tuck is one of the princes. I don't see him now, but I saw him there for a year or two. And I used to take the tape recorder over there, and we'd take some things down, but his wife got to be sort of looking over his shoulder, so I quit. I didn't want to, you know, it didn't go too well when you were being censored. And one of the most beautiful sayings I ever heard, you see, little glimpses into the world around us. He went over there one morning, I stopped by there and told Grandpa Rollison that he wanted take a little moonshine, a little liquor. And Grandpa Rollison told him to go back to that shed and just pick out what he wanted, and he had it in quart jars and half-gallon jars and one thing or another. Just all laying out there, you see, almost in public. Well, nobody bothered him. And his boys came back from the war, from the army, World War II, and they got meanness in them. they would fish with seines, and they would catch alligators, and sell their hides, and Grandpa Rawlison says if they could think of anything else that was illegal, they'd do that. Well, one of them's still up there. I don't know him, I'm sorry to say. One of them, the one that had the most spirit, he got too much moonshine. I wound up in a greasy spot in the road. But now that's what this would lead to. Now, the way they do it here, now what it is, the way it looks here is that the only people they're interested in are these old timers. Mm-hmm. You turn through here, here's making soap.
Mm-hmm.
Here she's making something, and you see she's got that long dress on,
mm-hmm.
all like that. But it's that's just that part of the country up there. And the part of it I'm interested in, it would, and this is mostly a process. Now here's hunting and hunting turkeys,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, Andy Webb tells about how he calls up a turkey and then blows his head off,
mm-hmm.
and it's all in his language. It's in years they can figure it out, you see,
mm-hmm.
and it's substantial. It's informative, you see, and it's an experience. And now you see, there's a picture of him. Now what they've done in this, and it's really. Really, far long. It's way long, you see. and the 10th graders do it. But I still don't think that the 10th graders do the editing. It's too nice for them.
Mm-hmm.
They may set it up, and somebody else comes along and finishes it off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, they'd have to have some help. Help. But you see, they meet them and talk to them,
mm-hmm.
and they cut through all sorts of foolish talk and silly questions, and they get to, in this case, it's process. They still haven't really got to the man's experience, but it's a process, and it's about as close as a 10th grader needs to get, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And see how to put a bottom in a chair, and how to make a joint and a log house, and saw that how to business, and make moonshine. That's what he's doing. That's a process. and they've got the that, and they use a tape recorder and photography, and they just combine all the arts in it. I don't think they have any of the movie thing. I don't know whether they do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't show in that. And it's now what I would want to do is this same thing, just on a little different level. But I would start with this. I'd let this be the basis for it. And I think it, except you don't have any of those mountain types, not here, anywhere around here. but what you do have, you have a vast amount of experience. Now, I know Joe Lee down here. See, he worked for Senator, what do you call his daddy, old man, what's his name? Senator down here at I'll think of it in a minute. And he had the Creek Mill over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the daddies of these people that you know now worked at that Creek Mill. Joe Lee was his foreman, was one of his hit men out in the field. And Willard Chitty reported on Joe Lee one time, where he clashed with old man Edwards, clashed with him. Old man Edwards didn't believe what he said, and he sent a nigger around to check up on him. And he came in there and caught the old man Edwards at the store, and he gave him both barrels. And he wasn't going to have any nigger or anybody else checking up on him. And if the old man Edwards couldn't take his word, it's just time for them to fight. And old man Edwards gave in, you see. And Joe Lee. Now he is the head man for this other big shot down there at Huff, and Huff, O.D. Huff, Buddy Huff.
Got the Groves.
Yeah. And see, everything Huff touches turns to money. He's another big man. And you see, Joe Lee. Now, I can't approach Joe Lee, but the 10th graders can. And what I've found is that they'll tell you anything. They'll just talk. And anything they tell you is public, and there's really nothing really private about it. I don't care what it is. He'll tell you his trouble with this old man here. He'll tell you just as quick as he can about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And now, they got the oral history. But see, the people in oral history aren't... what they do, in my estimation, is, I don't know. That wouldn't be my approach. Oral history. I think this is a much better approach, and you see, it'll go in some directions. Now, that's what I was thinking about the university. The university has taken the turn of going up on the upstairs. They don't even want undergraduates. They've got to have them, but they don't want them. And they used to, you know, give you the grounds for promotion, and one of them is to take part in the community. Well, they've cut that out. They expect some service out of you, but it's service within the institution. So you see, it's ingrown. And now they have a writing program over there in my old department. Well, you see, the people who write, the young people who write, don't have really a command of it. They haven't had much experience, and what they have, they don't have it under control. But they won't start with them. You see, they get John Charty, who's one of the national figures. And so what they count on is getting graduate students and super graduate students, you see. And I really, it's just a showcase. It's just a, that's the word for it.
Good reform.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just sort of to make a show. Well, of course, they do a lot of good work. But see, this is beneath them. Well, I don't know anyone. It's probably beneath a whole lot of them. The community colleges probably would be beneath them too. But it seems like you'd have people sort of grounded in the community who are in the community colleges. But that may be an assumption, a jump.
I think there are some. There are some. I'm not sure how many. One of the difficulties I have is to find people who appreciate the process of doing, except the intellectual process of doing. And when it comes to the practical matters, and this may be my own bias coming out, but I have a lot of difficulty finding an appreciation for the doing side, the skill sides, the artisan side of things, and an awful lot of appreciation for the intuitive part, the creative part. You know, that appeals so much. But the nitty-gritty, the doing, not very many people broaden out into that very often. And I found that more, I guess, since I've been in the humanities, realizing that, you know, some of the almost disgust with which these people are held that do the hard work, you know, that really make the process work. I don't know how many of those there are in the junior college.
You know, that feeling, class feeling, just call it that, is just phenomenal. I don't believe many people realize how fierce it is.
No, I don't think so. Mm-mm. And how subtle it is. It's expressed in the subtlest of ways. I'm very much interested in the fusion, at least, or the fusion of both intellectual and manual skills. And I think they're necessary. And the processes by which that might be learned. And the vehicle, I think, and it's not far, it's very close to that, is the kind of cottage industry idea, where people can begin to experience both the intellectual and the doing side of something, just something, to see both sides of it. That the job isn't finished once you think up the idea. You know, that you can, that there, that the joys of doing, carrying out a plan that you make of by yourself or something you create in yourself is almost as much fun or more fun sometimes, and adds a new dimension of validation to what the mind does. The doing kind of validates the mind, and the mind kind of, they work together. They're not one the other. I don't know if that's close to this, but it has the same spirit. It has the same kind of spirit that you're talking
about. Well, now it might be somewhat different. But see, what I was thinking of this, as to see it's been worked out,
mm-hmm.
and it's well known.
Mm-hmm.
You get this on all bookstores.
Yeah.
There are a lot of followers of it, people
mm-hmm.
who are interested.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the interest is, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It could be just sort of antiquarian, just
mm-hmm.
look at these old fellas.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, various interests. But you see, it's a center, it's a core, and you can shift your direction just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but you still would be foxfire.
Mm-hmm. Is this a really a description primarily of how, well, I should look at it.
You got a grant.
Those people tell how to fix a seat and your chair.
Was that looked at upon as a school experience or an educational experience for these high school? Was this in conjunction with an educational institution, or was this something he did on his own?
Yes, he's a teacher. He did this the first year out of Cornell. He
didn't set up his own, like, free school, kind of, or his own school then.
He was collecting knowledge that, I guess, could easily have been lost without reaching these people.
Yes, and you see, now what he did, he took the obvious form. You go up in the mountains, you say, look at these mountaineers. They're gone. You better do something about it. And they've got a way of life that's visible and obvious. Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. But everywhere you go, you've got the same thing. And it doesn't have to wear an old felt hat.
Yeah.
You see, what it would do, it would include my experience out here with a herd of cattle. And it would include Bob's experience, you see, at Duke with the old theology. I mean, you see, it would extend to that. Mm-hmm. You say that's a little far off. Well, it's not for me, because I've worked in this since. Oh, I've worked in this almost full time since 68.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then developed some going into certain arts, certain types of art.
I don't
or
do
process.
The process at all.
Process?
I leave the process alone.
Someone else do that?
Well, you see, I don't need the process.
Oh, you don't need it.
I've got another direction, but the process is there. I could give you what I'm interested in, but it just takes time, and it's just a variation, you see.
You don't want to tell me, or you don't want to take the time to tell me.
Well, I don't want to talk so damn much.
Well, I would love to hear at least the general, whatever you can tell me about it. I would like to know.
Well, there's no secret about it. I
thought maybe there was.
Please have an audience.
Well, that's what I'm.
Well, I can show you better than I can tell you. Now this is a novel of the fella up at the university who directs the writing program. Mm-hmm. You don't know him?
No, I don't. Kirkpatrick.
Kirkpatrick.
I saw that right away.
You remember Jake Wise, head of C3?
No, I don't know those
people. Well, that's not real. Well, I'm telling you what it is. It's he was in the Merchant Marine, and he was also a fighter pilot in World War II and Korean War. Now, so what he's done here is take his Merchant Marines and put them in the book here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here it is in the war zone. Here it is. They go on shore. He goes to Joetown. That's shore leave, and he takes them into all the houses. You see, and you can hear the bed spraying, and you can hear everything else.
Yes,
you see,
when
they got to fight, and if they can't fight anybody else, they fight each other. That's all in there, and it's circumstantial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, my point of view be considered different from that. He doesn't let them talk.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've learned to do is let them talk.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is they talk so damn well that it makes me ashamed of the way I talk.
Mm-hmm.
They report on their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to give you a process.
Mm-hmm.
And they can jump from one generation to another, and it's not a matter of memory. And all their talk's informative. I'm talking about the countryside now, your so-called artisans. And I investigated a grant for a while until I found out that it was a blind lead. And the lady who was helping me, she said, oh, what you're doing is commenting on human nature. Well, it is in a way, you see. It's taking faculties that he don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a writer, and I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been the merchant marine, and I haven't. And I thought I'd write up a little bit on that. I've got my letters from World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Victory ship I was on, one of the characters we had to deal with was a bosun. And as it happened, my letters are about as flat and empty as anything could be. But this particular letter is just full of everything.
it's
full of the bosun. And the bosun had a hose out there, hosing down the deck. But he really wasn't innocent hosing down the deck. The officers were up on the next deck, and they wanted to go through, and he wouldn't let them. And I remember I put it in the letter. I went to the captain, and I said, you know, these fellas, they could get along pretty well with all these officers if they just go through channels. Anything they did, they complained that the officers going through the companionways and where they had their lounge and their mess hall, they just didn't want all that passing back and forth. They didn't care about the passing, but it was damned officers they was after. And I remember he sort of hunched up his belt when I told him, talking to him like that, and then sort of changed the subject, went to something else. And so my comment in that letter, that back in 1944, was, it seemed like the captain thought that they wanted the negative approach. Well, you see, that world of the bosun, that's the one I've lived in since 1968, and the countryside,
mm-hmm.
it's
mm-hmm.
somewhat the same. And there's one thing that they can't turn up an opportunity, and that is the prank. There's nothing like a prank, and it's they can just carry it on and on and on. It's perfect guileless. And I can give you cases.
Mm-hmm.
This happened right here within my. You don't have to look for that. And if you outgun, it kills them.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it.
And you're out to do that once in a while?
No.
No, I just wanted to.
If I do it, it's accidental.
No, accidental.
I want them to win.
You want?
They have
God
to win.
Oh.
See?
Oh.
If they don't, they'll keep after me till they get me. I don't want them after me. But anyhow, you see, in 1944, you see how far off I was. Well, he's still that far off. Now, he's good. I mean, it's gifted.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to see what the sailors do when they go on shore leave and they've been on the ship for a while, that's about as graphic as anything you'd get, unless you drew a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe the picture was any more graphic than that. Well, that's the side of it. That's the process that I'm not really interested in. My interest would be talking. Now, let me tell you. Here's the thing of it. That bosun came to life right up there outside my office just about 2 months ago.
Let me give a small preface to that. Yeah, I was feeling a little bit, we have ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some days you feel like it's
we have
downs. Everything just clicks right off, and some days it just nothing clicks
mm-hmm.
right off. You know, well, you've got to average it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, guy was complaining a little bit about, well, you know, the countryside, the crackers, the countryside had just left him. They'd all died off or moved away, and it just looked like this was the end of the road for what he'd been interested in. He went up to the office and he called me. He said, "Guess what? The bosun is here." And he's still floating. Now you can go ahead.
Yes, that's right.
He actually appeared?
Yes, sir. He'd been there for several months and I hadn't seen him. And he walked back and forth. He sort of leaned over and he sort of goggle-eyed. And when I first went up there, one or two of my best friends turned out to be the janitors. And then, you see, that was when they brought the farmers in. Nice, self-respecting people. Well, after that, they changed that. And it was an easy job, you see, just sweeping, and not much of that. And so they started bringing the underprivileged in. They put a lot of colored people in there. Now, if they'd been interesting, colored people would have been one thing. But they weren't. And they also brought Sunland Training Center. They'd get a few of the chaps over there who could sort of walk and talk. And you'd see a fella coming down the hall, look like he's a normal human being. You'd speak to him, and you didn't get much of an answer. And what I found out was, you see, he just couldn't give you much. Mm-hmm. So that cut me off. And I wasn't expecting anything. Well, I don't know. I was feeling pretty mean that day or something. I had got through a paper or something like that, you see. Had a load off my shoulders, and I said in there, here come that fella. I said, what in the hell are you doing out there? Oh, you know, something like that. I've got a manner that I can make contact with them. It seemed like I don't have to think or anything. I just make contact with them. Like
vibration.
Vibration. And he stopped there and said, God damn, hot today. Well, I knew it. So I sort of got up there and I said, it's so damn hot today. And we sort of hangled out there on the steps, and I sat on the steps and he squatted out there, and we talked for 15 or 20 minutes. Three things he said. So I knew I had to get some of that down. I could put it down as I heard it, but I had to have a little help. So I took that little, you know, they got those little Sonys and things you put over the shoulder. And I just took it up there and laid it on the desk. Next time he come by, I come on in there. I said, come on in here. He said, sit. And he sat down there, and he started that same thing. And I brought it home and played it. And we never did play the whole thing. It lasted about 45 minutes or an hour. We never did get past the first 5 minutes.
I just broke up.
It was just so rich. Face still hadn't heard the first 5 minutes. I transcribed it. Well, that was Bosun.
Come to
life. Well, you see, he can talk,
mm-hmm.
but he don't know it.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And I haven't run across anybody who does.
But you've run across a lot of people that can entertain and that you can learn from. Well,
oh, God Almighty, he's an entertainer. He's a performer. You see? And I remember when we were growing up, we had these painters and wallpaper, paper men come up there. Paper and paint went together.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been before your time.
No.
Well, old Romy Bowden would come up there, and he'd stand out there and look at the thing, you see, where he'd been painting. And we would look forward to him coming up there, because it would always be fine talk. Well, I didn't realize it then. And you see what they said, everything they said, we just hang on to everything they said.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Eastman does the same thing. He comes up here now. He's the last one in this community. And we work along here, and pretty soon, you see, we'll take a break. Come in here and sit down. You see, you can't talk too well outdoors. There are a lot of things about talk that I've found out that's curious, Dorothy. You'd think anybody would know it, but it's not. I used to think the best place for me to talk, we'd go out there and lean against the gate and look out on the field. Well, it's not. The best place is right here. or some place where everything's cut off from you. Mm-hmm. I see right here.
Where it's easy, where it's easier to listen.
Yeah, where you don't have as
distractions. Where you got no distractions, no noise.
And you can have some control on the talk. Mm-hmm. It's working with a living human being, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Instead of just working through books. Yeah. It's actually working.
And I don't go beyond that word. I let them talk, and I believe everything they say. That is, I look at it from his point of view,
mm-hmm.
just like
mm-hmm.
Shakespeare and Milton talk.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it could be valid. It's not necessarily correct. But if you go and look for the truth and what's correct, you've got other good ways to go anyhow. But it's
find yourself coming back now. do you find any difficulty? I can see the transcriptions would be very, very entertaining and alive. Is it more difficult to get it into Word?
Oh yes.
Then
you gotta hear
it. Do you have to do anything to it to get it to come more to life? If you put it in book form, does it lose anything? Or do you have to doctor it a little? Or do you doctor it at all?
You see, let me tell you, he makes these bosuns talk like college professors.
Yes.
There's not a single mistake. I didn't say college professors because they don't talk too well.
They make mistakes too.
They make mistakes.
And he's found too.
You
that
see, it's wholly unrealistic. It's
mm-hmm.
got no
mm-hmm.
support. No.
And this beautiful talk of a guy called people of the countryside. I say the carpenter, or somebody who's dog hunting over here, or Miss Daisy down here. He's a Georgia cotton picking.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they can't read
mm-mm.
what you write because they don't. What if they were to see the way they speak down in print, they'd be horrified.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They want it to be...
Yes, you've got that. I don't know how he gets away with that. He puts it down sort of phonetic-like and misspells and all
mm-hmm.
like that. I don't know how he gets away with it. I couldn't get away with it. If they saw it, if I wrote down what they said like that, they'd sue me.
Well, what do you write down? What do you write down?
Are these tapes? I don't write it down.
Maybe
what?
You're missing the point. I don't think you're in.
You're
in
the
result isn't to write a book.
Yes, I've
it?
Been writing books.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, when you talk to
them, but I just use one or two of them who I have a little understanding with. You
mm-hmm.
see.
But that's not the result of the process approach you're talking about, is it? I mean,
sure.
is that what your main sure. reason for this is to write it down, right?
No. Well, you can enumerate your priorities any way you want to, but you have to write it down. You've got to have a market for it. You can't keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to make it available for use if you can. As I see it, basically, guys interested in an inquiry.
I'm
Hello?
I think I understand
yes.
that. The problem I
Hi.
Would see, I wonder what you do about the problem of losing the life of
okay.
it. I mean, there's a tremendous...
All right, let's see. All
tremendous,
right, that's fine. Good enough. Mm-hmm.
I know I sat and listened to people just talking, just pouring themselves out in any way they... And how entertaining and how warm it was.
No, they just
I'm wondering how much of that gets lost in trying to transcribe or put in some form to maintain.
Well, what you're doing, Bob, you're getting over into the difficult side where you to hear it's one thing.
Yes.
Takes years or so. And now you're getting over into the artistic side and it's I don't know what you do.
That's
you just do the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ready answers.
You're talking about, really, you're concentrating now on the excitement of being in contact with these people for you.
Well, there's a lot to it, you see. You can put it in your own terms. For one thing, it gives them faculties that are pretty high up. They have experience that they have looked at. You see, raw experience, you can't transmit it. You don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They look at their experience, and then they have the gifts that enable them to report on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now that's and you see, education now doesn't know that, and they have pushed all that aside,
mm-hmm.
so that their experience is a wholly different type of thing. They don't have this sort of experience anymore, and they don't report anymore. So,
well, are you saying that you'd like to see young people have the experiences that you've had with some of these people? Is this part of what you're saying too?
Let me tell you, I'd like for it to. Yes, I spend a good deal of time trying to find ways of this is one approach that's the reason I sort of bombed. I don't have access to the junior colleges, and they are on an opposite side of the fence from me. I'll talk to them, but they're not too interested in talking to me. So I can't just walk up to somebody and find out what goes on. And he works down there, and I thought, well, he doesn't know, he can
mm-hmm.
kind of find
mm-hmm.
out. And so I have spent a great deal of time trying to find ways of bringing it forward, making it known
mm-hmm.
to somebody. I don't
mm-hmm.
give a damn who, just somebody who can find out what I found out here. And pass it on. If it seems to be worthwhile. and if I had my choice, I wouldn't do that. It's that's the hardest thing I've ever done. It's hard on me. You see, like this writing program up here, they would normally pick up something like this, just like that. But see, they've gone with that universal tendency that this last president over there, that got from the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
and he belonged on the college campus just about as much as I belonged on the Supreme Court. You remember the last
mm-hmm.
president?
Oh, yeah.
And I read some of his statements, and he didn't know what the hell he was doing. And he opened it up for them so that they could take it in that direction, so that they've isolated the university community. And the only thing they do over there now is just sit on committees, their own committees, and look at each other. Well, I think that's the last thing they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the campus then now has got to be a form of life all its own.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be. People should go to school and never go to that goddamn campus. That's the worst influence you've got now.
It's true. And the junior colleges aren't much different, unfortunately. They're fast moving in behind them. Well, I think I need a better understanding than I have of precisely what it is that you are attempting. I
what
it,
what you do, just read this, or you do, and I mean, just look through it, you have
all
to
right.
read it.
Okay.
What you do, you see, if you had a little organization,
mm-hmm.
you see, that will pass the public inspection.
Mm-hmm.
But if I put it on a different level, past the process, it won't. So if you can establish it on the basis of the process, then you can. Now here's one thing, and it would be a process. There's a lot in the process that still be valuable. You see, you won't have any wildlife as long as you have those airboats. Anybody who has ever been on an airboat will sit down and talk to you for the hour, the experiences they had. And they'll tell you that. They'll tell you the same thing. As long as you got airboats, you won't have wildlife or fish or frogs. We don't have frogs out there. You don't hear frogs anymore. Down here in the horse country, you see, they've got all that beautiful pasture. But it's mowed so low, you see, you don't even have cover for a cricket. So all those 85 horse farms and the richest people in Ocala and nobody in that county down there, you see, are seeing to it that you don't have any wildlife, including quail. The quails don't have enough cover out there to nest. Well, all that would come out in this sort of thing, but you see, there's no social criticism in this. There would be in what I'm talking about. Except you don't have to take it as social criticism.
No, it's really kind of a report on the state of things in various places around the culture.
Sure.
Huh?
Sure.
And that doesn't come quite as criticism.
No, you see, the countryside never criticizes.
Yeah.
They
always complain.
They don't complain.
Oh,
they just give you the circumstances.
Oh, yeah. This is the way it is. Yeah, and it comes off without judgment, almost.
Yes.
As a visible world.
You see, in the world they live in, they're too vulnerable to. Now, you gotta consider now that I may go farther than I know in none of these statements.
Oh, no, I'm just trying to get a flavor, and the only way I know is to try to say it back to you.
Yeah.
And I know it won't be right.
Well, if I'm wrong, you see, if I go too far a lot of times, I tell you things I don't know.
But
one of the things that's interesting, I think, in the very beginning when you listen to God talk or anybody does, is he's used to making statements, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be true.
No,
and more than likely, they're not true. But it opens the subject to where you can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And people will pick him up and say, well, God said this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's,
that's
not
what
that's
he
not
said.
The point.
No.
I didn't
no.
say it.
All right. Let me open the subject then. You're saying, the sort of thing you're talking about is if I were down here in some little out-of-the-way place and you came in and I'd say, I could say, well, down here, if one of those niggers comes into town, I just pick up my gun and I'll shoot him. And if he doesn't, I don't hit him the first time, then I'll shoot him the second time. And if he doesn't run away, I'll kill him. Now, is that the kind of statement you would pick up as sort of reporting? I'm taking a terrible risk here, but I'm used to doing that. I'll go away bloody. It's all right.
Yeah, that's a little bloody.
That's a little bloody.
Yeah.
That isn't quite where you are.
They don't make statements.
They don't make statements.
I make the statements. They don't.
Well, what would be, then that, I don't know, I have to go back through that again. I guess, try it again, would you?
No, it's there's a whole lot in it. Now, let me tell you how you do.
Okay.
I mean, there's just one little insight after another. Now,
all right.
So you just assume that there's a whole lot there and it all mixed up.
Well, there's a lot there that I'll never know.
Well, unless you work in it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I don't expect
that. Well, take this. you see, they say it takes two people to have discussion. Well, it depends on what you want, you see. I don't care for discussions anymore. What I want is just one fella. I go along with him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he plays out, I'll give him a little rope and help him open up a little bit further, and I'll see a little bit more from his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get two points of view at the same time, all you do is get discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You just get all balled up. You don't know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's from my point of view. I don't intend to eliminate discussions from
mm-hmm.
the world.
Mm-hmm. But you want to go and center on someone else and let them
respond.
Well,
you're looking at the person.
Yeah.
And looking at the person.
Yeah.
Center on him. Let him take the.
Yes.
The center.
But there again, you see, there's so many statements that you have to, and assumptions you have to make. You see, when he talks, it's really not personal things that he's telling you.
No.
It's his experience. You say, well, what's personal? Well, for one thing, emotional things. Another is psychological insights. Sort of personal. I don't go in for either one. I'm not interested in psychology or emotion.
Mm-hmm.
that is in death.
Mm-hmm. What do you trigger or try to inspire?
I just open it up, open up his experience, there you see.
How do you keep him away from his personal, telling you about it, all his personal feelings?
They never do that.
It's amazing thing.
It's only the educated people.
They just sort of recount events. Is that what type of thing they do?
Well, you'd have to listen to some of it.
I'd like to. That'd be interesting. I don't quite. I haven't had that experience.
Miss Eastman will come in here and sit there down there, and I'll say, call him, and I'll say, Miss Eastman, I've got trouble up here with the sand. It don't work. Can you come up a minute? He'll say, I might come up if I have a little time. I might come up around lunch or dinner. He'll come in here and he'll come right in and he'll sit down in there or out in the
front.
I'll put some orange juice in front of him or something.
Yeah.
He'll sit there and he'll push, he's about, I don't know, he'll push his head on the back of his head. By geez, I tell you, that trade wind down there is really in trouble. And
now, you don't make statements, Faye.
Well, no, he won't make a statement, but he'll go right into, I've been over there fixing a light.
Yeah,
I've been over there fixing a light at the trade wind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you need.
And once he says that, you know you're in for it.
It's all circumstantial.
Now, that's almost all, that sounds like the present tense again. Is it everything done sort of in I'm doing sort of thing?
Oh, no.
It's all kinds of grammar.
He skips from one generation to another. And
uh-huh.
He never pays attention to
generation.
That's
what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, yeah. Not necessarily descriptive material either that he gives you, is it?
Description, there's no such thing as description. Description is still informative.
Okay. See, I way over my head talking that.
Well, God damn it, I've done it since 1968. Solid almost.
I'm trying to, you know, I just don't think that it's within the scope of my experience to talk about this. The only place I might have come close, when I was a kid in college, I bought cream from farmers.
Yeah.
I had a cream route, and I would run that route every day and go around and talk with farmers and sometimes shovel manure with them and listen to them.
Yeah,
but I was never trained, you know, I never really was trying to get that.
No, I never trained.
No.
Let me tell you, you see, there's so many things I found out, if you try to learn them all in one lesson, you see, all you do is just get bewildered.
Oh, I understand.
You see, I put 12-hour days
mm-hmm.
on this.
Mm-hmm.
I've been tireless. They see me in there, they say, look at that. Bird don't know what to do day or night. So you can't.
That's interesting though, Dad. When Bob said he went on a, you know.
But that's it. If you see the paper route, you see, if you go on your paper route or your milk route, as long as you see the people, but you don't. You've got a little time off, you go window shopping. You see, that's just a sheer waste.
They'd never say that they
went on
a milk route. They tell you what was said on the milk.
Never tell you one of the best cases of that. Mr. Louis Nealon, he's one of my friends, the Audubon friends, except he always comes out here on the Audubon trip, and we wrote a book on him now. Mr. Talks with Mr. Louis Nealon. Or if you call it writing a book on him, he writes his own book, we just set it down. Well, he came from California, and when he was around 18, they had a beautiful fruit orchard out there, prunes and all, grapes and all, and then the gold dredgers came in and bought the water and dried them out, and the whole thing just went to nothing, so they had to leave the country, but he still lives in California. They came to Florida, and he came down here before World War One and took the, he's 80, in his 80s, and he took the 2-year course in agriculture, and then they gave him a position of being the director of the University Farm, and then from 1935 to 57, he was for 20 years in there. He retired in 57. He was the Extension Forester at the University. Well, this blustery February Saturday morning, he showed up out here, and we saw him round in that corner there on foot. He got in here, and he was just exploding. Road is slick out here in clay, and he slipped off the road. You see, and he's been driving cars since year one, and it's embarrassing to him. He's cussing. So, Louise said, there ain't any trouble, Mr. Nealon, we'll get you out. And so he sat down there, and we got to talking. And while he was seeing, now here's the thing. We knew all this was there, but we couldn't get to it. We knew all that California life was there, and we couldn't get to it. We couldn't get to anything past 1928, when he was county agent in Flagler County. That's where they homesteaded.
And it was his proposal that he tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
It was his proposal
mm-hmm.
that he tell you about his experiences.
Well, sir, that morning, when he was flustered, And we had some of the young fellows that were out here working with me at the time. Fay was here. And we had a good audience for him. They do better with an audience. They perform.
Mm-hmm.
Brought up that way.
Mm-hmm.
We started off on 28 for breakfast. And we had to combat him and make him do it. He had that old ladle that he reached in there and put it out into what, Mr. Nealon, did you put it out into? You said them soup bowls. And what it was them big soup bowls like they used to use on the Pullman cars. Well, we prodded him. We jerked him. And we were all after him there for a long time before he got started. And after that, he was a lumberjack for some of them. Way up in the snow belt in the Sierras, and just like that, he got in there with a team of horses, taking supplies up there with 18 horses, and they had to get around that bend, and they went just as far out as they could, and he relived it.
Mm.
Well, sir, what we found was that after 1928, he couldn't reconstruct anything. He got to be county agent, and he was always with all sorts of people. He was all over the state, saw everybody, but he couldn't tell you about anybody. He was pushing program. You see, his mind was on program.
Expectation.
Good.
His mind's on program.
Miss Neal is practicing the one. Don't know why I can't remember. Can't tell about that. And he wanted to because
yeah.
This was his.
So we call that the county agent mentality. It's very common.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you see, what you run into. You get little glimpses of that all along.
Some people.
You see. Yeah. Well, now, I keep in touch. I've almost abandoned the other side. I had much pleasure as they give me. But. If I had the thing handy, I'd give him that. I tell you, if they come back out here, I'll play a little of them. I've got two or three little tapes.
I think they would love it.
Mm.
I took a few little tapes. I had to study them, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do anything with them. I keep them. But now I'll tell you what to do. You see, it's a very simple process. You see, I got the, I use this on these things here. But all I got to do is plug this in, you see,
mm-hmm.
and get it on the
line. Under the table?
And just lay it up there, and just don't call attention.
Nobody
to it.
Worries about
just
it.
Just don't advertise it. Just
yeah.
take your updates.
Yeah.
That won't stay as to be.
Yeah.
And then I'll take down a little bit, and then when they leave, you see, I can
listen.
They know that it's...
I can study it. I mean, I don't have to trust my hearing.
But these youngsters who've been working with a guy who come out here, it, you know, Jeff is age and all, for the first time, they can look at another person. They can look at a person and see within his experience, their
mm-hmm.
father and mother,
mm-hmm.
and, you know,
mm-hmm.
next door neighbor or anybody.
It had a pretty immediate use.
Mm-hmm. Themselves? Yeah. And it's healthy because you see someone in his own experience, and then you can look at it and you can say, well, this is, you know, he acts this way or that way.
And they don't have any of those personal things. They just don't crump up.
Mm-hmm.
They don't with me. Now the younger people, they take advantage of them a little bit, see, and tease them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tease me.
Is there a particular way of responding that you have identified? Is this a? Are you interested in a particular way of responding, or that the responses come from a particular part of the person? His sense experience, is that what you're after? Is that does that mean anything? Is it? It doesn't mean anything. But is it mostly doing things? Is that where most of it comes from? The doing, not thinking, not necessarily. That's not intellectual necessarily, in the sense that we know it. It's not thinking.
They're not abstract.
Abstract. It's concreteness. A lot of concreteness.
You see, they abstract in a concrete way. They're. You see, they give you the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't translate the experience into abstractions. And you see, you say, well, they ought to.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's the other way around. Maybe we ought to follow them more and cut out a lot of the abstractions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't propose to, you know, to reform either party.
No, you're really making, trying to just record it.
But also, not just, I don't know, whether I get a feeling that it's not just the recording, but it's also what you're learning from.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what you're...
Or what anyone might learn.
What anyone might, and
yeah.
especially what
yeah.
maybe you learn about yourself by listening to someone else.
Oh, sure.
I don't know. But it seems to me that
yeah.
it's not abstract.
My problem is, and our problem is, that we're trying to abstract this to make sense.
Yeah, and you ought to just let that go.
Yeah. Right. There's no point at this point.
Now, we could talk to some of them if they were here. Oh, I got one or two tapes and I can play them. But
I think that's the whole problem. I mean, I think that's the thing. Somebody will say, well, I want to hear, you know, God talk, or I want to see what he's doing. And in 30 minutes, they want to know.
Yeah.
But what you do, the whole process is it sort of comes a little bit at a time. And you have to look at it and see.
Yeah. We think we ought to know, ought to be able to figure out, you know.
And
this,
it
yeah.
doesn't work that
yeah,
way.
I understand what he's
uh-huh.
saying now.
Mm-hmm.
Took me
one thing it really reminds me of, and I don't know if there's any connection at all, but I read Vance Packard's The Nation of Strangers last summer, which made a big impression on me. And one of the things he was saying, that the alienated, lonely young people coming up to our schools need, is an experience of living in a community with a historical sense, with roots. And what you're talking about,
yeah, they have roots,
is the same kind of thing that he was talking about, that he thought it would be very valuable to preserve certain sections of the country, maybe with federal funds, to keep it exactly like it was, and then let young people go and live among them and learn from them.
Yeah.
And that's
mm-hmm.
Is that the kind of thing
well,
you think about?
That's associated, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because our young people lack roots, you know,
yes.
are lonely, feel alienated, and that somehow this sense of past and history is something that's badly needed. I don't, you know, maybe I'm trying to...
Well, now one of the boys who stayed out here a long time came up at Winn-Dixie. And he was about as sterile as any. I didn't realize it. If I had, I wouldn't have got him out here. He was in one of my classes at the university, and I followed him for several years. He finally came out here, stayed a while. And uh, what it turned out, he had actually really had come up as a bag boy. And somehow or other, he had just cut it out of his mind. We got back in it a little at a time. And he got so he reconstructed. People didn't mean anything to him. It was more the process and the displays.
Mm-hmm.
And a little black tie they had to wear. Oh, he reports such things as this. His daddy was an official at the headquarters down there with Nixon. They'd have ideas. One was to give away these plates. It worked fine. And to the cashier, and say, now, would you like to have a plate with this? Or something like that. And after she said that half a day, she got so tired saying it, she wouldn't say it anymore. He got little insights like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept at it until he took the stuff out to the car. And he might exchange a few words. He could reconstruct those things. He got so he could reconstruct the particular cases of what happened when he took that thing to the razor. One time, the woman opened the trunk, and there it was with his husband's fishing gear in it, no place to set the groceries. I forget what she said.
He remembered.
So instead of feeling that,
by and large, there were no people in it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of feeling that all those years were lost, you see, he was trying to look at it.
He tried to look at that
and make something out.
Yeah, and it was really informative what he made of it, largely because it was sterile. I don't know. You see, I can't explain it, but that's the way it came out.
But you know, it's amazing how far it got, and these people out here. I have no personal affection, at one way or the other. For well, some I do, but after being in town with my love friends. Close friends and going to tea parties and things like that, and no conflict, nothing, you know what happens at tea parties.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a great relief to have Miss Mary come in here and talk about the cowlicks or the Zane's Bremer bull and be circumstantial and straight, and you know, it just feels so good.
Anything that touches.
It's real. Mark Twain right there, you see,
mm-hmm.
It's real. And it's a visible world they live in.
Mm-hmm.
And all we live is there.
Always something going on.
That's right. And a guy has tried often to ask his students, he said, well, you know, I don't care what you write about what goes on the campus. They can't. Except abstraction.
I don't encourage that campus stuff.
Used to.
But it's abstractions,
you see,
you know,
how I feel.
Well, that's gone a long way.
Is that what you didn't want to tell me when I came in here? I kept saying, you know, something about, or he kept saying, well, you don't want to hear that. You know, I get off on that, I'll talk all day. And I finally said, well, I wish you would.
Well, I was going to tell you. That's what I was talking about. I didn't
want
to
cut
it.
Why not?
Well, it cut you out.
Oh. Yeah, but I'm always around myself.
We get off the next year.
I think that's
I
right.
Wouldn't find out anything about you.
I think you did. I think
good.
You had me talking.
I was
about
sweatshirt.
Hmm? No, a long time.
Schweitzer was, yeah, he was in the Schweitzer, I bet, when
you
were here.
Really. Do you remember that, when I was in Schweitzer, after reading Schweitzer?
I never got the circumstances of it, Bob. I just knew in general. But I,
well, I don't remember what they were.
I figured it was... I never got into Schweitzer, you see. But I knew it would be tempting if anyone did.
You'd find it quite tempting.
Yeah. I was in the Empire for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But the white man's time was over in most of those places. Schweitzer was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's certainly kept Guy more than alive. This has been
more.
Real exciting,
right.
And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Exciting for the students too.
Mm.
And it's
what I was thinking about, Rob, it's fairly concrete, and it's not all this stuff we've been talking about. See, I wouldn't bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
Just the basic notion of foxfire.
Mm-hmm.
Of taking the old timers, that's good enough. But you see, in this part of the world, you can't. You've got to be careful who you call an old timer, so that you'd have to redefine that, shift that around your mind a little bit. Anybody who's had a little experience, especially if you could draw a picture of it,
mm-hmm.
And that'd be the basis of it, and then you can.
You see this as gathering the same kind of cultural information that they did in Kentucky. This was Kentucky, right?
North Georgia.
Yeah. Would be in this part of the country. Would you see the teaching of this sort of thing or the gathering of this sort of thing through a junior college? How do you see that tying in?
In junior college?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't teach it. I'd just find somebody... I just feel that somebody in the community college would be interested in the community, and that's basically what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Except this is the old timer element, but you can get those people, those old widows who live in those big houses, you see, and that's the last of them. That's the last of the big houses. That's the same thing. You don't have to have
it. Yeah. But to make a record of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one thing he doesn't know, Wigington,
mm-hmm.
He knows a lot more than I do, but this is one thing he doesn't know. He doesn't know that those people can talk in that circumstantial way, in a sustained way. He doesn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't run across anyone.
And the students who work on this are young.
In other words, they are own interpreters. They interpret themselves.
They're graphic enough in their description or whatever it is they do that you don't have to wonder what they're talking about.
That's right. You go ahead and use your own words.
I'm now very conscious. I've become very conscious. Well, I had that experience several times lately. I'm using a model of a personality model in some work that I'm doing, and I was talking with an 80-year-old lady who designed it, and it was a terrible shock to realize that I had taken off on my own vocabulary so far away from her, and she kept reminding me, that's not what we mean. That's not the word for it. So that set me back a little.
That psychology business, you see, it was me. That's gone on for a long time,
mm-hmm.
And I got that in class. I remember this boy Clark. He wanted to read these things with a psychological interpretation, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Abandoned a lot of that
understand that.
But I don't use it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use the emotional or the psychological.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, what do I use? Well, I use a good bit.
Not for that.
And now it doesn't have to be an old timer for this to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Old Wayne Daniel, he's the head of the visual aids department, or whatever they call it.
Wayne.
Huh?
I know Wayne.
You know Wayne?
Mm-hmm.
He's out here not so long ago, and he got started. I had to send him home. And you wouldn't call him an old timer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Came out here and had Buick.
I'd like to listen. To this, really would be interested. I would like to make a point of doing it, as a matter of fact, whenever it's convenient. Because I'm interested in something that may or may not be akin to it, but from a different point of view. And I'm talking about the establishing of interpersonal communications. Now, that, you know, this is all psychological and be useless to you, but... But to have whatever is essential or is the essence of the person speaking to the essence of the other person rather than a lot of abstract kind of chit-chat that goes on the surface. Kind of moving down to a level where something important is being said between two people. Important to the expression of the whole person rather than just the head.
Well,
and someday, I would like to make a point of doing
now,
that.
Now, one way I've found of doing this, and I learned this from Emerson, whoso would be a man must be a nonconformist. So you see, that's not true. It has doubtful truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
He who would be a man must be a nonconformist. Well, he who would gather mortal palms must not be hindered by the name of goodness, but must inquire if it be goodness. Well, you see, that's been one of the most fruitful statements in the American writers. Anybody who reads Emerson knows that, or at least has a faint recollection of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, you see, it's a statement that is fruitful. But not necessarily true. So that, like we said, and what it does, it cuts through a lot of things. So that when you want to get to something that has some meaning, somewhere along the line, you see, one way of cutting through is by a statement.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time the gas man was in here, and it was the gas season. And he came in here, and I was making out a check, and he was writing out a receipt for me. And I said something, and he said, I said, you've got to go. You're in a hurry, but you look at me. You've got to go all these places. Look at the fix I'm in. I'm out of hay. You make contact. I don't know what it is, but it's also a statement that cuts through. It's a strong statement. And out here, most of us use our outdoor voice. Well, up there in town, you see, they use a telephone voice. Well, if everybody uses a telephone, outdoor voice up there, it'd be hard on some sort of
I told
him that in a telephone voice, it wouldn't
have been. Mm-hmm. You see, you laid something on him where he saw he was needed. I mean, that's a very intimate, personal thing, it seems to me, that happens. You know, it's not just a It's not an abstract thing. Well, one time I did, or this, you know. But in a way, when you said that,
that's an immediate thing.
He began to find a way that he could help you out of your dilemma, which is, to me, is a very personal contact you made, right?
You see, you think of the psychological side of it.
Well, you don't think it's there?
I just don't think in terms of psychology.
But it's something very meaningful.
You can say all you want to in psychology, but I don't at all.
Well, I don't know if I think in psychology, but I was thinking that it establishes a...
Go ahead. Go on. Don't stop.
I just think that's very important.
Your words.
What you did is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Would be
well,
very important
well,
to me.
Well, that's not important either, you know.
No, but just
say
to
that.
Say that you want some, to tell someone to tell you about their experience... I mean,
it won't work at all.
It sounds
no.
awful.
Oh, no.
Oh, you never do that.
But what you just did, what you just said you did to me, was to tell him that you had a need that he could help you with. That's a message you gave him.
Yeah.
And that's why he was willing to sit for half an hour and tell you about it.
Well, it didn't help me. Quite
a bit.
I was still out of
phase. One of the cutest things, I'm telling you this, I got it. One of the students was sitting here. She'd been working with Guy for some
time.
Now, you
see, what you have to do, you have to maintain your own point of view.
Sure.
And don't ever let him
talk you down.
Yeah,
oh, well.
That's
I'm
right.
Easily.
Uh-uh.
If nothing else, you see, you got to keep... The thing that makes your mind work is attention. You see, that's psychology, too. But you got to pull different ways. Now, you see, I found out the cow didn't help me think. I thought for a while it'd be nice just to have cows. I'd go out there and talk to her. I found that Mark Twain helped me a great deal more than cows.
Mm-hmm.
And without Mark Twain, them cows didn't mean much to me. They had sort of dull.
They didn't talk fast.
I
can tell you this.
You're not playing for keeps. You're not playing to win. You're playing to see.
I know this student is sitting there, and she'd been out here, and she writes very well. She has a rhetoric. She'd been in France for a year or so, and Guy had encouraged her to look at some of the things she did when she was in France. She just kept a little journal, like, you know, I went here and there and so forth. So she did. And one night we were sitting around here after dinner, and she was talking. Trying to look at one of the experiences, and it was just sort of a little impression she had, and she wasn't really seeing it. And one of the cookie came in, I believe, and he's a horse trader, and he sat over there, and
yeah.
He came in, and we just fixed him a cup of coffee, and he had just. Had some, he never came unless he had something to report. He was talking about his latest horse trade. It was very visible, very exciting. And after he got up, I saw Debbie get like this out on the edge of the chair. And she got a little bit closer and she started looking.